Thank you. Some of you heard an earlier version of this talk last summer in Banff. At that time it was ongoing. It's still ongoing. That's the way these things are. But it's in a somewhat different form now. So yesterday, Alyssa talked about CTL escape, and there are a couple of differences, primary differences at least, contrast between her talk and mine. So she only considered one epitope here. The focus of my talk will be when you have multiple epitopes. And second, she considered a specific disease, HIV, and mine's more general, some undetermined pathogen. This talk is really about a modeling method rather than a specific disease. The goal is eventually, once we have the method down and understand better what's going on, we'll put in more realistic other equations, as you'll see. Okay. So let me just remind you, CTL escape. Here's our infected cell, and it's infected with a pathogen that has several different epitopes. So what does this mean? So these are little pieces, correspond to pieces of the genome of the pathogen that are end up displayed on the surface of the infected cell. And each one represents a little piece, and each little piece is recognized by a specific CTL, a T cell. So here I've got six of these pieces. The black one isn't recognized by any CTLs. That's life. So we can forget about that. The other five correspond to five different CTLs. So when one of those T cells comes in and can recognize it, and then this cell will be killed. So the thing that we're concerned about is mutations in the genome, which changes these five epitopes. So if we get a mutation of one, so I guess that's represented, so P sub one, the subscript on the P is the number of mutations in those epitopes. So that represents now one of those has changed to white. White means it's no longer recognizable by any of these five CTLs. One is okay, one mutation is okay, because the other four CTLs can still get that cell. So it's this one over here. If we have, say, three mutations, then, well, it gets a little harder. There are only two of the CTLs of the five remaining. What we really have to worry about is when simultaneously or cumulatively, all five, it accumulates five mutations, one in each of the epitopes. Of course, as these mutations are coming, the CTLs are ramping up and they're killing the cells, so it's a bit of a race. And the question was, will we ever get to this stage, which we call escape in this case, where all the mutations have occurred before these cells, before the pathogen has been eliminated? Okay, I guess here's sort of another picture of this, except, basically the same thing. Right, so again, the initial kind, the letters have changed, but otherwise it's the same idea. So we progress through these things. There's not worrying, back mutations are too rare for us to worry about. okay. So these are the five different types of single mutation, epitopes with one mutation, they can progress to types with two mutations, and so on. So the question we had was very specifically, what we want to evaluate the probability that all of the recognizable epitopes mutate before the CTLs can eliminate the infected cells. So there's an issue, as we'll see here. You can approach this stochastically or deterministically. We have to put in some kind of, do some modeling here at some point. One can do this by Monte Carlo. I'm a big fan of Monte Carlo, but for these things involving large numbers of things and very small probabilities, one likes to look for alternatives. Okay, so what we have here is an alternative to that where we can actually carry out this calculation. So today I'll work in discrete time, and the discrete time unit will be days. Okay, so here's the first part of the procedure. We start off with a simple model. So this is a deterministic model, no mutations. And it can be other models too, but this is one we were looking at, and so this is the one we're going to build on. So the two main quantities here, so C is the number of CTLs at the end of day T. So there's no mutation, so there's only one kind of CTL. We're forgetting about mutation. And Y is the number of infected cells at the end of day T. So we have a discrete time recursion. So let me look at the second one first. So the number of CTLs, they proliferate. Okay, so A is the number of net new CTLs. D is a death rate per day. F is a proliferation function, and that depends on the number of infected cells. So as the number of infected cells increases, the production rate of CTLs, or the activation rate, goes up. You can choose that. I'll show you what we used in a minute. So that depends on the level of Y. And then we have this one here, the number of infected cells. So there's some net growth. So here we're sort of skipping over the step of releasing the viruses, and the virus is infecting new cells. That's kind of all embraced in one number here. There's also a killing of infected cells by C. So as C goes up, this expression decreases, and that pushes down the expansion rate of the number of infected cells. So K is the killing rate, R is the proliferation. I'll have to say a bit more about this in a minute, I guess right here. So okay. So I've copied that over at the top of the slide. So just a comment on equation one. So I do this because we're working in discrete time. So a more common thing might be this sort of thing, which we've seen in different forms. So this mass action killing rate of infected times CTL. Because this is discrete, I don't want this thing to go negative for differential equations. You don't have to worry about that. So if I rewrite this factored out in Ry, I get 1 minus Kc over R. So that's the linear Taylor approximation to that exponential thing. So that's the rationalization, at least for exponential in that particular form. What we used for the growth rate was this kind of Hill function. M, I think we usually take for 1, but could be whatever. Again, M, H, and S are parameters that you can fix. So this particular thing saturates at some level. When Y gets very large, then it F approaches its maximum value, which is S. Of course, when Y is 0, F goes to 0. So, but again, you can use other things here as well. So in the example of this talk, I'm going to use, so this will be the basic underlying deterministic no mutation model that we start from. And the parameters are chosen somewhat arbitrarily. I ended up with C reaching its maximum of 10 to the 9 on day 9. So these are counts in the entire body. So what I'm interested in is eliminating probability of eliminating or of escape in the entire body rather than per microliter. And Y peaks at 10 to the 10 on day 7. Okay. So the second step is to add mutation to the simple model. It will still be deterministic, as you'll see. So in the sense that we don't explicitly have random variables in here yet. That will come in the third step. Okay, so now we start talking about epitopes. G is the number of epitopes that the CTL can recognize. In the sketch before, G would be 5. And again, P sub I is the subpopulation of viruses with exactly I mutated epitopes. So going from the smallest I, 0, P0 then is the wild type with no mutated epitopes. And PG is everything mutated, and that's the escaped population. So this is, we're interested in knowing when this population occurs. Another key parameter is mu, the probability, so probability of mutation of a given epitope during a given replication. And often this is somewhere between 10 to the minus 6 and 10 to the minus 3. Y sub I, so before we had Y just counting infected cells, now I'm going to label the affected cells according to which of the PIs, according to how many mutations were on the virus that has infected that particular cell. So again, counted by T, I going from 0 up to G. Okay. So for instance, if we look at, say, a cell that's accumulated, infected by a virus that's accumulated 4 mutations, then at the next generation, it releases viruses, those infect new cells, those cells will have at least 4 mutations. Could be 4, possibly some with 5, and smaller probabilities of having even more than 5, but potentially all the way up to everything mutated. So what are the probabilities of getting more mutated? Well, we say for each epitope has a probability mu of mutating. If we look at the number of unmutated epitopes, here it's G minus 4, then consider each epitope mutating independently. So this is now just a binomial distribution. If we want to ask in a single replication for a single, out of a single cell, the probability that mutations occur in exactly M of the U previously unmutated epitopes. So that's this binomial expression, binomial probability, which I'll just write as bin MU. Okay. So from that we can compute the expected number of mutated infected cells that we have of each type. So I'm going to call, so we have to look at, so I and K. So if we start with a single PI infected cell at the end of day T, and how many cells will that get arise to? Or I guess think of a day as being one generation. Maybe that's a good way to think of it. So I say a day, but what we're really thinking of is one, whatever the time is for one generation. So WIK T plus 1, right, so if you have if you start off with a single PI infected cell at the end of day T, what's the expected number of PK infected cells that will directly arise from that one one day later? So we can calculate that in terms of the binomial probabilities and in terms of the discrete time recursion that we had. So W0K, so this is if you start off with the wild type, then what happens? Well, there's probability of it surviving here. This is the term we saw before, e to the minus k times the number in the exponent. This is the number of CTLs over R. So this came from this equation that we had before, yt plus 1. This is when we weren't including mutations at all. So all the CTLs could, all the cells were fair game for all the CTLs. So the expansion rate for per cell was what's in the black here, R e to the minus kc over R. So that's the term that goes up here. That's the expected number of increases, expected number of new cells for a single cell. And then we have to say how many of those turn into type K, and that's going to be binomial. So there are G different epitopes. The probability you get an offspring with G mutations is this binomial probability. More generally, so that's if you start, the initial cell is wild type. More generally, if you start off with something that's already accumulated I mutations, then how many PKs do you get in the next generation? So K has to be bigger than or equal to I. So it's the same as that, except for a modification. So it's still the binomial probability. Right. So G minus I is the number of unmutated. K minus I is the number of additional mutations you're asking about picking up. And the only thing we've changed here, CT is the total number of CTLs. But not all the CTLs can kill a type I, something with I mutations. So this represents the fraction of CTLs that can. So their total number, Right, so there are I mutated epitopes, and G minus I of those, G minus I are unmutated, so the fraction G minus I over G is the fraction of CTLs that are available to kill a PI type, a PI infected cell. Okay. So it's, we're assuming here a homogeneity among the parameters of the epitopes, that they kind of all sort of behave the same. Anyway, so we have this recursion here, and well, we can put we put this into the next recursion. Is this gives us a important thing is this gives us a time step recursion in discrete time for the number of infected cells of each type. So so to get in time day t plus one to get the number of cells of type k. You look at the total number of type I, where I is less than or equal to k, and then look at the expected number of mutants that come from each of these, from I that, that mutate up to k mutations. So that's just a linear expression. This sort of thing, this thing we can we've got calculated before. The initial condition, say one a single wild type cell, y not zero equals one. So yeah, back at time zero. And again, we interpret this, so we have this discrete time recursion based on these probabilities, and we interpret y sub I as the expected number of PI infected cells at the end of day t. So we have recursion for the expected values. Now we want to put in a recursion for the random variables. So I have to define, tell you what the random variables are. So I'm going to define some random variables with the property that these yi's are the expected value of xit. So xit is the actual number of infected cells, cells infected by PI viruses. And what we're interested in now is the probability that x sub g, so these are this is the escape population, at a specified time t, so maybe 40 days later, 40 days down the road, what's the probability that there are any of those cells around? The probability that this is bigger than zero. So the probability that we've had CTL escape by time t. So we have to specify the distribution of the random variables. In this case, specifying the mean's not enough. But what, we're, what we'll do is we'll take them to have Poisson distributions with, and the conditional means will correspond to the recursions that we got for the Y system. So let me explain that a bit more. So suppose at time t, you've run this thing. If you want, consider running a, doing a simulation and watching it run up to time t. And at time t, you've got x0 of t, x1 of t, x2 of t. Those are the counts of the number of infected cells on that day. Then each of each one of those expects to give rise wikik. That's the number of type k's that you expect to get from one from each of the xi's. So what we have in here. Basically, just compare it to the, so it's basically this, this recursion over here with the y's replaced by x's. So this is the mean that we want, and we take a Poisson distribution of that. And each of these Poisson random variables is independent. So a nice property of the Poisson distribution is that is that when we do this, we can think of each cell as coming out independently. In the sorry, what do I mean by that? Sorry. So if we can think of it, we have a whole bunch of cells alive at time t, infected cells of infected by different types of viruses, and what this really does is says each one of them is reproducing independently. Independently, each thing of type I is generating a Poisson number WIK T plus 1 of cells of type K. And because of the Poisson properties of Poisson distribution, we can treat all those things as independent. So what we have here is, sort of as we heard this morning, we have a multi-type branching process, as we heard in Jessica's talk. The different types correspond to the different the number of mutations that you've got, and this is also time inhomogeneous. It's the probabilities change over time, and that's because the population of CTLs changes over time. Okay, so we have this stochastic recursion, and it doesn't mean that each XK on its own is Poisson. It means that given what's going on in the previous time, it's Poisson. So this is Poisson with a random parameter. So there doesn't seem to be a useful formula to actually calculate this escape probability, but you can compute it numerically quite efficiently using the recursion. So I'll just show you how to do that and show some of the results that we get. So what I'm going to actually compute is the complementary probability that escape has not occurred by time t. So again, fix this terminal time, capital T, and for small t in between, from time zero up to the end, I'm going to write QIT to be the probability of a single PI-infected cell at the end of day t does not give rise to an escaped cell at the end of capital, at the end of our observations. So the thing we're interested then in particular, so Q00 is the probability that a wild type on day zero, on the initial day, does not give rise to an escaped cell. So that's the probability that X sub G of T is zero. So this is the thing that we're looking for, Q00. Okay, yeah, top is just a repetition of the definition of QI. So now we can define QI recursively. So what can we say on day little t? Well, we look at all the possible things that can happen on day t plus one. So this thing will give rise to a bunch of PJ infected cells, J going from I up to G. So we look at all possibilities. NI cells of type PI and up through NG cells of type PJ. So we write down the probability of that happening, and then since this is a branching type process and the evolution becomes independent in this model, we can just raise for each of those, what's the probability that each of those does not give rise to an escaped cell by the end of day capital T. So since there are NJ of those, we raise QJ to the power NJ and take the product of all those things. Right, so we can work our way backwards. The conditions that we have at the last day are fine. Here there's no probability anymore. This is sort of the trivial boundary condition. If you start with an escaped cell, then the probability that you don't see escape is zero. If you start with a cell that's not escaped, then you have no time left for evolution. You're out of time. So this is one that you haven't seen. So we feed those things in, and you can actually do these calculations exactly in this recursion, and that recursion comes down to this, so QIT, and then we just get the sum over QJ of T plus 1. And the WIJs are things that this is what we calculated back in part 2. And this CS function, the number of CTLs, this is what we calculated back in part 1. So this is all, we can all do this computation. We just have to pass through the times once. In each thing we have this sum to perform, and we have to do it for each index I, but overall the computation, the time to do it is just proportional to g squared times the number of time periods. So certainly much faster than Monte Carlo, and if anything, our main concern on doing this is round-off error. So let me just show you some results and then show you some things I don't like about these results. I've got a few different choices of parameters here for the mutation rate from 2 times 10 to the minus 3 up to 10 to the minus 6, and G, five, number of epitopes, 5 up to 20. And the numbers that I've put in here, so for instance, if mutation rate is 0.002 and 5 epitopes, so 7 is the day on which the probability of escape. One second. Okay, the probability of escape by day 7 is not incredibly small. It's at least 10 to the minus 6. And day 11 is the probability where the probability of day where the probability of escape is at least 99%. So really, if you're going to escape, it's going to be somewhere in between here, between day 7 and 11. Okay. So one thing we see from here, which I wasn't expecting, is that the time intervals for all of these things, even when we go up to a relatively small mutation rate and a large number of epitopes, is still in a fairly small window. I was expecting things to spread out more, but all of these, the day of escape is basically spread on some interval of 5 to 6 days. So there's not really a spreading out. So again, this is in contrast to what we saw in Alyssa's talk yesterday, where so the hallmark of what she was looking at was there was a large variation. Some people would escape very early, others people would escape quite later, but there's different things going on here. Again, this is a consequence, again, partly of looking at multiple epitopes. Okay, another thing which I was surprising is that through all these values, escape always occurs if you wait long enough. And that's not something we really, that doesn't really correspond to reality. So this may be, both these things may be more of a comment on the model, so may give some insight into the model. So for continuous time models or continuous space models, yes, you would expect that. You have some differential equation which gets down at some point, maybe after day 10, you have 10 to the minus 8 infected, 10 to the minus 8 viruses in your body. So basically that means you have nothing, but it's 10 to the minus 8, so as a differential equation, it can eventually pick up and ramp up to become, the expected number of escape cells can become zero, even starting from something tiny. But for a discretized probabilistic model, you don't expect that to happen. So why is it happening here? And I think basically the reason is if you go back to the original model, step one, where there was no without mutation. So in that case, we had so by the seventh day, we calibrated it so that you had 10 to the 10 infected cells after a week, say days 6 to 8. Well, once you bring in mutation, you're going to have, okay, at least that many. It's not going to make it any worse. But once you have 10 to the 10 cells, infected cells, then law of large numbers starts to come into play. And so as long as you have some probability of any one of those cells of escaping eventually, as long as it's not smaller than 10 to the minus 10, or not much smaller, then one of them will eventually, one of those 10 to the 10 cells will eventually escape. So I think, again, this sort of calls for us to go back and look at what's going on. I guess there's still interesting things here. In some cases, this might be a useful model, but maybe it points out, I think, to part some of the shortcomings in the killing process in the original model. So just a few closing comments. It's not essential to use the Poisson distribution. In principle, you can also do these calculations with probability generating functions. So one thing that also is not is unfortunate that we'd like to eliminate, we have to approximate the number of CTLs by the value in that initial model without mutation. Another thing to look at is what happens if some CTLs grow faster than others, if you have immunodominance. That can be incorporated in here, I think, although it would slow down the calculation somewhat, but probably not still allow it to be practical. Okay, thanks for your attention.